mexicana, qué fruta vendía, ciruela, chabacano, melón y sandía. Era la vieja del otro día, más campanita de oro, déjame pasar
con un frijol, me lo sería. But, and that's count over your head as a club. And for many of the smallest things, you can lose days. Get into a fight with a girl, and somebody reports it, some stool pigeon among the inmates, even if an officer hasn't seen it, the two girls will be called in and lose days. For having what they call contraband in your room. Now, contraband is everything and anything that you don't buy in the country. And there are all sorts of things that are handed down from generation to generation. And it's all contraband. It can be a ruler. It can be lipstick that comes from the outside and not bought other is. It can be thread that somebody gave you from, or that you took from the garment shop. It can be a button. It can be, a belt that somebody gave you, all sorts of things are contraband.
You can't give each other things?
Well, I'll discuss that in a minute. They don't encourage giving each other things. In fact, don't encourage it at all, which is, again, against human nature. Going against humanity. You can lose days for that. Then you can lose day, and as I indicated, some people lose every single statutory day they've had for all sorts of these sort of things. And it's done quite heartlessly. People were constantly, and were always in fear of losing days, because everybody values the single day they have that they can get out earlier. Then on top of losing days, you can be shifted from your cottage just like that. Without any preliminary information, you can be shifted from your job without any discussion with you as a form of punishment and sent into another college where you once again have to reestablish your way of living. Your room, which you've decorated, is destroyed and you have to start all over again. That's very troubling. But the worst feature of the punitive measures is what is called seclusion. To me, it's a remnant of barbarism. It has no place in it. Certainly, the women's institution has no place in any institution. And the men, the whole. Now, there are three types of seclusion in orders. One is medical seclusion. When a woman is sick and doesn't want to go to work, she can voluntarily go into medical seclusion, where she's in the same section of that seclusion is in. But she gets her three meals a day, and she can also get her cigarettes, but she doesn't go to work. And there are some people that take it. The other two are seclusions where you're sent to, and there are two sections of that. One is called the strip room. The strip room is without a bed, with a mattress on the floor, with a toilet inside the room that is flushed only when the officer comes around. With no glasses, no glass. And by the way, there's no glass in any of the seclusion. They're paper cups. Where you have nothing to read. Where your food is disciplinary trays of the most unpalatable kind and tasteless and has no seasoning whatsoever. And where you just can lie on that mattress on the floor and go nuts. You can stay in that room a long, long time. Usually, in the strip rooms, they send in those young people, and they're usually young, who have blown up in an explosion and resorted to a certain violent expression, breaking windows, having fights with people, using knives, attempting to use a knife, etc., and sometimes using a knife. There have been cops in there. Then there's the regular explosion. Where you do have a bed with no chair in the room, where for you don't have any cigarettes, where you don't have anything to read the first 3 days that you're there, where your fetus as well as your urination, and it stands there until the officer comes around and lets you go to the toilet to get rid of it. Well, you are allowed to go out and take a shower at a certain time that the officer allows you to do it. I don't know, whether once every few days or so. You can go to the regular toilet, but only when the officer is there to open it up. And these have iron doors. And there isn't a permanent officer on there, so that you have to wait for certain hours. So naturally, you must use these tall paper cups, and very often there isn't enough room in the paper cups, and it just goes over the floor, and it has to remain there because you have nothing to clean it up with. And people have been there for 10 or 12 days at a time. Now I want to give you the story of one person who was in there three times in a period of about 6 weeks. This is a young woman about 30 years of age, young Negro woman. She's there, she's in there for forgery, I believe, although she was also addicted to dope. At one time, she happens to be one, despite having a great deal of courage and a real spirit of rebellion, and who just won't take anything lying down. A very thin little thing. And I imagine she's not a well person in many respects. I want that story down. You can cover it up because it's a very interesting one. She was afraid of thunder. She was kept in one room. She had a room to herself. And one night, there was a terrible thunderstorm. And when she's alone in her room and a thunderstorm, she bangs violently on the door, demanding that it be opened up, and demanding that she be placed together with other women. And all she asked for was to be put in the door so that she would be with others during the thunderstorm. Now, this had happened to her before, and this was done before. But in this time, on this night shift, there was one of the main officers, who today is a lieutenant, who just refused to do it. And told the officer in the cupboard that either you tell her to remain in her room or else seclusion. That's the idea for her. Now, that's punishment. Now, she committed no crime. She didn't violate any rules. She was just mortally afraid of the thunder. Now, by the way, I was shocked how many of the women are afraid of thunder there. Because every time the thunder, and by the way, thunderstorms are very, very prevalent in the Orson, in that area.
They're not in San Francisco.
Yeah, but they are in Orson. Well, the climatic.
I mean, you're not used to thunder.
And if you're not used to thunder, you're just, I mean, it's based on ignorance and backwardness. I don't deny that, but regardless of that, you've got to recognize a fact as a fact. Well, what happened that night was, she was pulled and forced to go to seclusion. She resisted. And they took, in addition to the officers, they brought a guard, who is the biggest guard we have on the res. A man who's about 6 feet four and about 3 feet wide. He's a tower of a guy. And he took this little thing, who is about 5 feet tall, and weighs about 100 pounds, and forced her to go to seclusion. Now, she claimed she was hurt in the process of it. She will handle it. But nevertheless, it was with force that she was brought. She was in seclusion 12 days. She was shifted from her couch and sent to another couch, so that where she had been for 8 or 9 months and established friends was completely destroyed. She was sent somewhere else after that punishment. I don't know if she lost days. That was the first thing. She came to, then came into my cottage. Now, she always talked back to everybody, and she always acted up. But somehow or other, I made a comment to one of the people. You know, I think that this person has more sense than she appears to have. I think she's got a good head on her shoulder. I don't know what makes me think so. I later discovered that was true. We became very good friends. And she comes from a background of educated members of the family, not her mother, who's always working, but her sister and brother, who are professionals. So that when you broke down the surface, you found a very intelligent person who liked to read, who could talk things over, who had an interest in what was going on, although she knew very little about what was going on in the world. Because she had been going from one jail to another and spent most of her youth that way. The second time she was taken to seclusion was for a just really something that is a human act. One of her friends in her previous cottage was leaving, and she had no chance to say goodbye to her. So one day she put her face towards the window. I believe it was what is known as quiet hour in order sometimes on Sunday when you're supposed to meditate in your locked room. She shouted out, "Goodbye, whoever it was." She broke the quiet hour. For that she was sent to seclusion for 10 days. That was the second time. The third time she got about 6 o'clock lockup. She was not in her room. And there she balked and demanded to be taken to seclusion to find it out. So she was in seclusion for a night and saw she couldn't do anything. She came back and accepted the 6 o'clock lockup. Then, just a few weeks before I left, was the third time she went to seclusion. This she didn't even know was coming. One day, on Sunday again, she was locked in her room, and the doors are unlocked about 2:30, 2:45 for those that go to church, giving them time to get dressed for church. It's not open for the others who don't. They remain in the room up to 3:30. Then at 3:30, you can go either to the living room or remain locked in your room till 5, supper time. I used to stay all afternoon in my room. But I got out at 3:30 that day, and when the people came back from church, I asked where she was. So they said, "Didn't you hear? She's in seclusion." This is the story that took place with this young woman. Apparently, during the lunch hour, she talked for a few minutes to one of the young women from the other cottages that we walked through. The rule is you're not supposed to talk to anybody else from another cottage when they go into the dining room. People do it, and a healthy officer would just say, "Don't talk, you know, you're not allowed to," and send you away. This one had, in my opinion, real prejudice against the Negro women. There are numerous examples of which she committed some very serious actions, and she called certain of them incorrigible. So the way you were treated incorrigible was to just punish them constantly, quietly, without telling her that there was this question involved. She informed Colby Administration Building. And when the young woman came down, dressed, ready to go to church, she found the lieutenant waiting. And the lieutenant says, "Come on, you're going with him," using her name, "you're going with me." So she looked at her and said, "What do you mean I'm going with you?" She says, "Don't argue with me, you're going with me." "What for? What did I do?" "Never mind what you did, you're going with me." She landed in seclusion for another 10 days. And found out later that the reason she was in seclusion, they called it visiting. Well, here is a young person who was rebelling. And she tried to find all sorts of ways of getting away with it. But they, in turn, were not going to let her. And the only way they could do it was just to constantly keep her attention, constantly punish her, and thought that in this manner they would be able to correct her. Obviously, they don't correct anybody that way. And all you did was just rouse her anger, and she was in a furious state. Well, this sort of punitive measure, in my opinion, upon punitive measures, as I call it, is the system of authority that has been established in that institution. Under this facade of great politeness, with an officer seldom raising her voice, is this there? That results in the fact, as I described it, of keeping the young women in a constant tension. In other words, rather than recognizing that people inevitably would be in a tension in an environment that is so isolated from real life, these methods that they've developed there as forms of maintaining discipline by force results in maintaining that tension at a high level, so that there's a feeling of insecurity on the part of the people. They're always worried And they're always worried if they break a rule. They're always worried if they're going to get caught. They're always worried if they're going to lose days. They're always worried if they're going to be in seclusion. They're always worried if their jobs are going to be changed. There's a constant feeling that they can never get what they want, that they will always be compelled to do what the officers. They use that expression, and they use a snake, but precisely because of this method of authority that has been established there, where discipline is not developed on the basis of involving the inmates themselves, but discipline is developed on the basis of further punishment. In other words, you're a criminal, you're paying a penalty, and darn it, you're going to pay more while you're here. And that's all we're concerned with, and you do as we say, and don't question. That's the case of some of the youngsters, who do all sorts of stupid things, but they do them in a spirit of rebellion. They'll break windows, because it's like a caged-in person who doesn't know where to move and has nobody to talk to. So that the result is you just sort of break out in violence as a means of expressing yourself. Yet they could certainly correct that if they wouldn't have this kind of a system that prevails.
And then the rest of that is that when they leave, they still are against authority.
That's right.
Even more than they were when they came.
Much more.
They hate authority.
And that's very widespread among the inmates. Now you see, there's another reason for it as well. The system that has been developed, that is in contrast to what existed before, makes this system, this method outrageous. See, you have a system of keeping the inmates divided. Your very cottage is different than a men's penitentiary where you're all in one building. And when you go out into the yard, you're all together. There's no such thing in orders. While you may go with other cottages somewhere, you're always kept separate.
Oh, no.
Always. Now let me describe that to you, because that's not an unimportant part of the problem of that penitentiary. You are told you are not to visit with anybody from any other cottage. The cottages, well, I don't know enough, maybe are 100 feet away or 200 feet away, I mean, some cottages. It's normal for you to talk to people from other cottages, but if the two cottages get together and sit with each other on the lawn of one of the cottages, you are immediately called in and you will face one of the punishments. You're lucky if you can get away with nothing, but very often you'll get one of two things easily, lock up or lose days, etc. You are told you're not supposed to visit. The only time you see people from other cottages that you can walk with and talk with is when you go to work. So if you happen to have friends among those where you go to work in the same direction, you join them at a certain period of time. They don't like it, but they cannot stop it. But if people work on different levels, you never see it. So that if you happen to have a friend in the upper campus and you live in the lower campus, you never see your friend, except if you have classes together and you make them.
Did they invite you three that
way? Yeah, that's right, and I'm going to give you an example. Or you go to church and you meet them. I never saw Claudia and Elizabeth.
You didn't.
I was on the lower campus, Claudia and Elizabeth were on the upper campus. I saw Claudia in the Spanish class when we went to it. Then this class was finished ball games. You sit, every college sits together and is of course has either one or two offices with them. When you go to a ball game in the field, you have a place for yourself and you cannot mingle with the people of other colleges. So that mingling together of all inmates is not permitted. And you must recognize the fact that you do know people, because in orientation you know people and they are scattered in different colleges. In your work you know people because they come from different colleges. Many of them have been transferred two or three times from different colleges, and the possibility of any organized thing is eliminated by this system. The second thing is, they have completely eliminated any self-rule or committee form.
They had that at one time.
They had it one time. Now, Morton Harris, now, what's it that I began to describe in this elected group, and then this council that would meet with the Morton once a week, the committee in the cottages would meet with the officers regularly, and many violations of a minor character were handled by these committees. only the most serious, which couldn't be regulated, would then go to the disciplinary board of the jail itself. All that has been eliminated. Therefore, there is no element of relying on the inmates to maintain discipline. It's all discipline by force. And I'll give you again an example that occurred in which I directly participated. There was some stealing in the storehouse. Bars of chocolate were gone. We knew, the women knew who did it, and we were very sore at it. Because we knew that if this continues and it isn't stopped, everybody would have to pay. So what happened was we were threatened. Immediately the threat comes in, must stop. And if it fails to stop, what we're going to do is institute a new system in the storehouse. Everybody comes in, it's going to be searched. As you walk out, you're going to be searched. We're going to place everybody, we're going to tell everybody that they can't move from the spot from which they're working. They can't roam in the storehouse, and they can leave that spot only when we call them through the intercommunication system. And they told us this. And that was quite a serious thing, and we began to talk among ourselves, and nobody wanted it. First of all, it's a big place, the storehouse, and one of the good things about it is that you could walk back and forth. It gave you a certain feeling of freedom. You could talk to anybody else in the storehouse, no matter where they worked, and who wanted to be degraded to be searched. Again, I definitely said that if they started with me, I don't know what I'm going to do, because nobody's going to search me. And we were given a lecture. The disciplinary court is actually a sort of an adjunct of the classification board. It has on it the assistant warden and sometimes the warden. It has on it the captain of the officers who, it has some of the lieutenants probably. And maybe somebody from the school building. Sometimes the doctor's involved if it's a serious case. Well, what we had there was three women, the assistant warden, the captain of the officers, and the lieutenant. These were the three, and we were given a lecture by the assistant warden. I balked at that lecture, and I said so as I walked out and told this to my family and decided to repeat the story to the family. We were given a story which approached all of us as thieves and informed us that if this thieving doesn't stop, then the threats that we were given by the boss at the storehouse would be carried through. And then, of course, people would also lose their jobs there, etc. I came out just furious. And why? Because any person with any intelligence would have approached it just the opposite way. We're not saying that all of you have done this. There's probably only one among you at the most that's doing it. We're asking you to get together in order to stop it, because whether we must or not. Now everything is done from above without relying at all on the inmates there. And it is done based on very backward personnel. Now I should explain that there's a classification board. And the classification board makes determination as to the kind of jobs you have. And it's headed by the warden who gives you. When I was in prison, when I was in the hospital, in which I dealt with some of these questions that disturbed me.
He came to see you?
Well, on Sundays, he would come in and say hello to all the inmates, and he had done that the previous Sunday, and I answered. And that Sunday, it was just prior to my leaving the hospital, that I decided that, well, I might as well tell him what I think. And I sort of opened up and spoke a few minutes on it. And I ended up with the following. And this is very characteristic of the whole place, at least to me. I said to him, I'm familiar with social work. By the way, there's no social work there at all. With social work on the outside. And I don't know what the qualifications are for officers in the penitentiary. He then informed me that it was not very high. Wages are low, etc. And what you generally get, because it's situated all the way from nowhere, just the surrounding area, can appear to have a heart, as I thought, for instance, some of the parole officers. I found out they're hypocrites. They don't tell the women the truth. They maintain an outward warmth under which is hidden a very cruel, actually, approach to the women. And they do very, very little for them. The minister may do something for the congregation members. At least some of the women think. He seems to be a fairly decent sort of a man. But he doesn't determine the running of that institution. And therefore, to human nature, when you see this kind of an approach and attitude, and you feel that especially when you see this kind of treatment of those that are alone prouder than others. You see, if you're prouder than others and you won't take the gap, well then they chop you down, and they chop you down by this constant punishment. And they indicate they're just not going to let go of you until you just conform. And therefore, but conforming is subservience. It's not to create greater pride in the human being, not to create greater dignity, but to more or less recognize that they are below, the others are on top, they're the superior officers, and that's all. I had such a, if I could only do that, I think I'd be happy. Just go over there and say, well, whatever her name is now, you were my superior here. But by the fact that you were at the head of this institution, but I want to assure you that I've never considered you superior, intellectually, morally, or socially. The only way you can get, if you dare to say I'm going, you're punished, because you've then violated rules, you're out of bounds, as they put it. Your system is, you must write to your parole officer or to the assistant warden or any of the other officers. Wait for them to call you. Now, if they feel they want to talk to you, they'll call you right away, which may be in 24 or 48 hours. But I have seen people wait for weeks and not be called as a result of an interview. The result is people are continue to stew with the particular problem, which becomes very big to them, no matter how minor it is. That's one element. Legal, and this is not a school. This is a prison. You've got to treat them with authority. You've got to establish your authority. You can't do it if you're friends with them, and that sort of thing, which is just contrary to every principle that we know. But those are sort of the general things. At first they sent me clothes that were my clothes from the past, and when they came, I was sick. I put them on and they looked like sacks on. Because I had lost so much weight that the clothes didn't fit. So I had returned the clothes. The family was waiting over another day, and informed them that even I, just like everyone else, after having worn what you were compelled to wear for so long, with nothing fitting, want something new, and want something to fit. No matter what it is, but it should be new and something to fit. Because of the clothes you were compelled to wear all along.
By the way, what did you wear then?
Well, I'll describe what I wear. Let me just finish the story. So they finally sent me two dresses, a gray one and a brown one. A little beautiful velvet hat. And a pair of very lovely shoes and a pair of slacks. And red shoes to wear with the slacks, because I was going home by car. And I went in there and tried it on, and frankly, I didn't recognize myself. First of all, I'd gotten so thin, and this was a size 9 dress. I suddenly looked like a little girl with gray hair. And it was agreed that the moment I had the dress on, you dress under the supervision of an officer, and she checks everything that has come in, that I would call them. And they all came in. About 6 or 7 of them came in. And first of all, they were amazed to see what I looked like in clothes, because I was sort of a different human being. But there then was the dignity of the person reestablished as a result of having been just one. I was a distinct person to them after that. I had a shape which they didn't know I had before. I looked more human. They didn't realize it before. And they were so warm and so happy about it, and which one I should wear out, and how I should then wear my clothes, and so on. Then, this was, I tried it on the Saturday night, and I was leaving early Monday morning. Well, I had let my hair grow, and I just braided and pinned it up with pins. I couldn't even get hair pins to comb my hair, and I didn't know what to do. At 7 o'clock, one of the young women rushes into my room. She says, "You're not going to go with your hair just pinned up like that." "Oh, no." She says, "You come on, and I'm going to fix it for you." And despite the fact that she had to go to work at 8, she rushed me downstairs, and with the hot iron, not with the curlers, because it was too late for that, hot iron rolled my hair underneath, cut my bangs, and rolled it so that I was able to wear a page boy, and it was just perfect for, you know, practically the way I comb it now. In fact, I got the idea from that. Then, see, they all go to work. Only the kitchen people are left. Well, they waited until I walked out dressed in order to see me. And I was told by some of those that were working the garment shop, because it faced the administration building, that I'd be sure to stop for a moment and wave. Mm-hmm. So they could, and the idea that you were going home, well, that to them was, they too would go home sometime. That you looked like a human being, well, that's the way they wanted to look. And it's really a very warm, wonderful thing, which is there among these women. It can be so readily brought out. It's brought out in all sorts of ways. Well, it's brought out also when I first came into the cottage. I was a stranger. Luckily, one of the women from the orientation came with me, and we happened to be friends. We were friends there, and we remained friends throughout. So I had one person, but you're a stranger. Your room is barren when you walk in because they've stripped it. Immediate, two or three of them came in and immediately gave you things you could use in order to decorate your room. And for weeks thereafter, you got little things, a pillow, a little knick-knack. They helped you hang up the curtains in order to make your room look homey. The striving to make the room look homey, to make it look decent, is just among every one of them. Every room varies. Mm-hmm. Despite the fact that they're the same size, they look the same, they have the same furniture, yet they vary because each one has put his own intimate touch on it. Mm-hmm. And it's really an amazing thing with what they were able to do with the nothing that they had in order to make their rooms warm and attractive and clean. So that it's that sort of thing that is so typical there. But what happens is people have no money. There are people there who don't work in jobs that pay, or who get meritorious days and don't get much money, and they just have nothing. And for months and months on end, they're not even able to go to college center.
They can't buy a cigarette?
No, you can't buy cigarettes. No. You get three packages of cigarettes a week.
You mean they're given to you?
Yes.
Oh.
You're allowed to buy two. You're entitled to 5 packages a week. Now, when they do that, if you're a heavy smoker, you can't get along on three packages. And it's a real problem for many of us who have no money. So some of them will do things for you. They'll wash your clothes, they'll iron your clothes, they'll clean your room, they'll do all sorts of things like that in order to get additional help. And of course, that's something that none of us would allow to be done for us. I mean, I've never had anybody do anything for me, even though there were dozens who wanted to do it for nothing, because that was one of their ways of expressing their relationship to me. But I felt I just couldn't. Not Elizabeth, because she couldn't bend down this carpet floor. All of the women helped her keep her room clean, and they were wonderful about it. But it is done. There are some who just go around doing that because it does give them a little something that is different from the diet. And if you have no money, you're really in an awful mess. And there are so many that don't.
Which reminds
me.